Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It is 11:07 Eastern Time. So glad you could join me. I don't know what you're drinking. I've got a very strong cup of coffee made with ground espresso. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Klink. This is the Elise Klink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. Not literally, figuratively. Well, maybe literally, too. Lines are wide open. Happy to take your calls. I want to start by talking about my trip to D.C. Well, I was in Los Angeles first, and then went to D.C., and in D.C., I was at the annual Society of American Business Editors and Writers Conference. So these are the smartest, most adept business reporters from around the country. Plenty of folks from Bloomberg and the New York Times and, you know, just Wall Street Journal. I mean, just everybody that you've read all these years who I've become such good friends with over the, you know, nearly 20 years I've been attending this conference. And having conversations with them and listening to some very interesting conversations about tax reform from people who are actually leading the charge. One of the interesting things about going to D.C. for these conferences, and they're not always in D.C. Next year they're in Arizona, so who knows who they're going to be able to drag out to Arizona for the conference. I'm sure it'll be somebody good there, too. But in D.C., it's always politically charged. And so I get an opportunity to listen to the political side, not in a partisan way, Democrat versus Republican. Political, I mean, how the machinery of Washington works to get the job or not job done. The other thing that was interesting is I spent some time with some contacts I have at the OCC who are pretty high up talking about the independent foreclosure review process. And this is particularly important for folks in Georgia simply because there are so many foreclosures and so many people who may have been a part of the whole foreclosure crisis. And by that, I mean people who were wrongly, you know, foreclosed on, sent foreclosure notices incorrectly. Military, we have such a strong military population in Georgia. Military population who may have been foreclosed inaccurately. So one thing I promised the OCC I would say today is that this week, starting tomorrow, postcards are going out. I've already seen the postcards. And if you have gotten a letter, there have been five letters from the OCC. Remember how we always talk about you have to open your mail and you have to answer your phone? Well, if you were foreclosed on wrongly and you received a letter from the OCC, you may be eligible for a payment under independent foreclosure review process. And that process totally blew up and they shut it down. And that's because they spent like $2 million on the consultants to review all of this stuff and not as much good came out of that. So I'm really, it was very, very interesting trip, and I want to share some insights with you as the show goes on today. But the most important message I have is that if you've received one of these or you think you were foreclosed on and you haven't received a check, checks are coming starting this week. They're going to go out in four waves over the next 4 weeks, and the checks are the checks going out this week or the notices about the checks coming out this week? I can't even remember. Anyway, you should keep an eye out. And if you think you should be getting a check and you're not getting it, you should contact the OCC in Washington, or you can contact me and I will forward your information to the OCC and then somebody will get back to you. They're very, very concerned about getting $4 billion out. It's $4.2 billion going to roughly 4 million Americans who they have identified as being part of the foreclosure process. And they're just going to send you a check. And in no way does this mean that you can't join legal claims later on. It doesn't mean that you can't fight your own battles. It just means you get a check. And for military who were foreclosed on wrongly, you may get a check for as much as $125,000. Typically, people will be getting somewhere around $800 to $900. There are only about 4,000 people, I think that number might be right, or 2,000 people are going to get the $125,000 checks, and then there's another group that's going to get $60,000 checks, and then most everybody else is getting an $800 check. So now I've done my duty there of letting you know that that's coming down the pike. 404-872-0750. The big topic of the conference I was at was the economy, and I want to talk about jobs. I want to talk about the deplorable jobs report this week. Oh, my goodness. But it didn't come as much of a surprise to any of the business reporters in Washington simply because all of us have had our eyes on the ball and are watching the economy, which, as I've been saying all year, is really not in as great a shape as everybody thinks it is. And the fact that we went from negative to positive in a revision for the fourth quarter of last year doesn't mean much to me at all. It is a rounding error. That's all. Going from negative 0.1% to positive 0.3% is a rounding error. Doesn't mean a darn thing. What matters is that we're suddenly not creating jobs, and this is now the fourth year in a row that we've seen a strong first quarter followed by a weaker second quarter. So there's some interesting stuff on the horizon. I feel like these tax guys that we had in our session, long term, I feel so optimistic about this country. Short term, which could be the next 2 years, not so much so. 404-872-0750. Let's go to the phones. It is 11:13. Rick joins us on the line from Riverdale. Hi, Rick. Welcome to the Elise Klink Show.
Yes, good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's going on in your world?
Well, it's not going too good, but anyway, I will give you a quick synopsis of it.
All right.
About a year ago, I had a heart attack, and now then I have about $20,000-$25,000 in medical bills after my insurance is paid. I also have two credit lines. One that is against my house, so it has a lien there. And then another one that is an unsecured credit line for my business. And I also have, and both of those are maxed out at 50 each. And I also have $73,000 and credit card debt. And whenever I do my tax return, my wife and I together make maybe $20,000-$22,000.
Wow.
Right now, I've gone to attorneys and they say file bankruptcy. We've gone to a reputable credit counseling, they say file bankruptcy.
Yes.
Let me
stop you, Rick, for a moment and just say that the reason you're being told to file for bankruptcy is that you earn $22,000 and you have $73,000 credit card debt. And the standard rule of thumb is that if you have more than one time's income in credit card debt, you are never going to be able to work your way out of it. You have more than three times credit card debt, not even including all this other stuff that's going on. So that's why you're being told that you need to file for bankruptcy. But how are you feeling? Your heart attack aside, are you just feeling crushed and overwhelmed by all this debt? Because I would.
To say it mildly, yes, I am. But somehow, we have managed to keep making the monthly notes and...
Are you eating? Are you taking your medicine? Because I can't understand how, with $22,000 of income coming in from both of you, that you would be able to buy your medication and make your minimums. I don't understand how you're doing that. Maybe it's magic. It's good for you.
The
stress has got to just be enormous.
That's what caused the first heart attack. Whenever I went to the credit counseling, I've got an excellent, credit score, as does my wife. And if I file for bankruptcy, I'm going to lose my business.
And why will you lose your business?
Well, because I'm self-employed, and what the attorneys had told me, they said, your business is an asset. There is no debt against it. And he said, yeah, they'll take your business, my tools and my land that my shop is on. They said they'll take that right away. And they said, if you want to keep your house, you'll have to reaffirm your house. And we owe about 15. I mean, the house will be paid off in about 4 years or so, but I'm looking at my age, and I'm trying to be realistic about it, but bankruptcy scares the heck out of me.
So how much money are you really making in your business if you and your wife together are making $22,000?
Well, that was after, you know, everything is deducted. I mean, last year the business did a couple of hundred.
$200,000?
Yes, ma'am.
Uh-huh.
And this year, I do not have long-term clients, but I have, the Lord's blessed me. That's all I can say is the Lord has blessed me, and, you know, I have been getting more business, but, I mean, there is nothing promised having a contract with anything, but I don't know. I mean, I was going ahead and filed the bankruptcy. If I could, in fact, save my business, if I would save my business, then yes, I would, because it would remove all the stress.
Well, there are different types of bankruptcy that you can file. You can file for a reorganization. You can file for a liquidation. So what you need to do is you need to talk to an attorney who understands what your needs are and can walk you through the reality. I'm not a bankruptcy attorney, so I don't want to give you bankruptcy attorney advice, right? That would just be me playing an attorney on the radio, and I'm not, which is not good for anybody. Trust me. But what I do.
Did you sleep at Holiday Inn Express last night?
Was I what?
I said, did you sleep at Holiday Inn Express last night?
I did not sleep at a Holiday Inn Express. I slept in my own house last night for the first time in like 11 days, which I got to tell you felt great. But seriously, Rick, what you need to do is find the right attorney who can help you understand what you're going to have to give up and what you can preserve in bankruptcy. And I do agree with your attorneys. Bankruptcy makes a whole lot of sense. I know a lot of people who have gone through bankruptcy and managed to preserve their assets. So the other thing that you can do is, if that's not an option, then you have to go and see if you can negotiate with your creditors for something less extreme than what you have. And to do that, you will, in any way, shape, or form, you're going to lose your credit. Or at least for a while. Bankruptcy will cause that. If you negotiate with your creditors, it'll cause that. So you have to figure out what's most important. And it seems to me that what's most important is to relieve the stress so you don't have a third heart attack. Because at the bottom of it, if you have another heart attack and it doesn't kill you, but it completely infirms you, that's not going to help your business either. So go find a different attorney, figure out your options, and call me back and let me know. It's 19 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. I'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Let's start with yours. Here on News Talk WSB, it's time for Real Estate Insight with Rhonda Duffy. Rhonda, welcome back.
Thanks.
So we think of CLUE reports typically as being something you might get for a car that you're buying. Like a Carfax report.
Right.
But there are CLUE. First of all, what is a CLUE report and why would buyers want one?
It is a comprehensive loss underwriting exchange report. If you ever want to test out, and I hope every buyer who is thinking about buying a home knows that they should be interviewing agents. You don't just pick up somebody because they're nice or you know them for a long time. You need to interview agents. And one of the things that every agent, but it blows my mind because I hire partners, agents for my team all the time from all different companies. Nobody ever knows what I'm talking about. You want to get a deer in a headlight, say a CLUE report. But a CLUE report is a tool that a buyer has to analyze what claims have been made against that property. And it doesn't matter who the insurance carrier was, they all have this database. So this is called a comprehensive loss underwriting exchange report. Now, look, it costs the insurance agent a lot of money to run these reports, so you have to really be in good faith with them that you're going to use them or at least let them quote you. But it's very powerful to be able to see if the seller's disclosure or your inspector or your own gut instinct matches up with what claims have been filed on the property.
So you would go to a home insurance company, homeowners insurance company, and
right.
ask them to run it on a particular address.
Correct.
And hopefully they would do this. You can't just pay for it separately, which would be ideal, right?
Right.
You would,
I, You know, I don't know. I can't speak for insurance guys. I guess maybe they could do it. But, see, they're not asked about it very often because it's not prompted by buyer knowledge or agent insistence.
Right. But a clean report would be very helpful because
oh my
if
gosh.
They have made a claim on, let's say, a major leak in the house and they don't disclose it. Now, they don't necessarily have to disclose it if it's been fixed, but at
Correct.
Least you can ask the question.
Yeah. Well, and they're supposed to disclose things, and they're supposed to tell you how they got it fixed in Georgia on our seller's disclosure. But, of course, seller's disclosures are now not mandatory. They're not even part of the contract. They're a subsequent thing that some people ask for, okay? So, really, when you're looking at the scheme of things, look, the biggest regret that anybody has is when they buy something. This is why it's called the biggest purchase, right? I'm talking about a house. When you mm-hmm. buy something and then you figure out you got taken, you can't just flip out of that house.
Right.
So you've got to do measures that are very concise and precise. That's why we use the 8-step buyer action timeline that I invented to make sure that people are checking things off as they go along so they feel good about their purchase.
Well, I know you've got more of this up on your blog, RhondaDuffy.com. Check it out. Rhonda, thanks so much.
Thanks. I'll see you next week.
All right. You bet. This is Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB. 36 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink with the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. So my Twitter is at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Already, we've been having a really interesting conversation today, and as we do always during the show, but this is a place where we push out all kinds of information, and if you're not a subscriber to my newsletter, you should be. It's free, which is great, but it has really important information every single week on taxes and investing and insurance, a lot of the content from the Equifax Finance blog. Did you know that we're doing these really cool things called the Real Estate Minute? They're video. They're 1 minute long. We've done, I don't know, like 25, 26 of them. They're up on my YouTube channel. Hopefully, they're going to be coming to a website near you soon. We are starting the process of licensing them to different kinds of companies, which are cool. But we have really interesting material in these Real Estate Minutes. And you can see it on my YouTube channel. It's called Expert Real Estate Tips. So we've got that going on. There's the CBS News Money Watch blog, which is really doing some really interesting stuff on home equity and this independent foreclosure review. And then we've got content at Yahoo. So all kinds of places. And all of this content feeds right into the newsletters that we send out. So if you sign up for the newsletter, you never miss content, no matter where it goes in the world. You can find that on my website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. So go and sign up. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We've got a bunch of lines open, but Mike's been hanging on. Hey, Mike, welcome to the show.
Yes, Elise.
Yes, Mike.
It's good to talk to you. Thank you.
How can I help you today?
Well, fortunately, I'm not as bad as your previous caller, the one with the heart attack. But,
I know, Rick, so much financial stress. He's had 2 heart attacks. Horrible.
Yeah. Well, my quick scenario, I have MS. So I'm on disability,
mm-hmm.
but I am engaged, have been for years, and of course the CPA told us not to get married because of the tax laws,
uh-huh.
and it costs us $4,000 a year in taxes, you know. So
the marriage penalty.
Yes, you get penalized for getting married, yes, kind of
yes.
stupid, you know. But, you know, I do have investments, of course I can't do 401k, but yes, I have IRAs, I have several REITs. And I am contributing monthly towards my IRA,
mm-hmm.
And I own some stock. But my question is, I'm not upside down on my home, which is a townhome, and should I pay extra towards principal to try to pay it off? Because I owe less than 20 years to try to get it paid off in 10 years and get rid of the $500-something in 10 years where I don't have that, that's considered like income, I guess. Or should I just go ahead and keep contributing more to my pension or my IRA and stuff like that?
Well, so here's the question for you to think about. What does your future income stream look like? You're on disability. I assume you worked for a long time.
Oh, yes.
So what does the future look like for you financially? Have you thought about where income is coming from and how much and how long it'll last and all of that?
Well, I mean, I don't have any car payments financially. I mean, I don't have debt other than the house, really.
But eventually you will have another car payment, or you'll have to pay in cash for your car,
well,
right? Cars don't last forever.
Well, yeah. Well, of course, I don't put many miles on them. I drive them until the wheels fall off.
So do I. But, you know, my uncle's got a car that's 18 years old.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've got quite a bit. I got some, you know, as far as in savings, you know, cash, you know, but...
But this is the future. So how old are you now?
I'm getting ready to turn 56.
All right. Happy birthday.
Well,
so 65, 67 is your full, I guess 67 is your full retirement age. So when you retire officially... Or when you go off disability.
Right.
Where is the money coming from? What I'm trying to get at is I like the idea of you having less of a house payment in 10 years. Because that's a magic time, right? You're going to switch over.
Right.
But at the same time, I really like the idea of you continuing to plow money away because 67 isn't the end of your life, right? You've got 67. You might be 77 or 87.
Right.
MS isn't, you know, one of those things, as you know, that, you know, you haven't been given a terminal diagnosis, so you have to...
No, of course, I'm fortunate with the MS that I have. I'm still able to get around. I'm not like most, so I am lucky there.
Right, but someday that may change as well. And so what I want to understand, and I want you to understand more importantly, is how the income is going to flow in your retirement, because that makes a big difference, right? The $500 that you're... You know, that you would be saving by paying off your loan early may or may not be worth having that money, the extra money plowed into your retirement savings now, that you then will be able in 10 or 15 or 20 years, that money might then turn around and give you a lot more than the $500 a month.
Right.
So what I'm trying to get at is how, you know, how is this organized for you? Knowing that you have a disability that will likely get worse, how does that all factor in for you, and what is the financial side of it, and how is that going to make you feel, and how safe are you going to feel? Because your question, which is a question I get quite often, do I prepay my mortgage or make more investments, takes on a different tone when you've got a long-term disability and a long-term illness that's going to be challenging and provide you with health challenges down the line. Does that make sense?
Well, yes. Yeah, it does make sense. I mean, I've been fortunate. I've had it for, like, 18 years, and it's not progressed. I mean, I don't have any progression shown. So.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
Really amazing. So hopefully that continues, and maybe you just have a really mild case, and there are really much better drugs today than there were 20 years ago, and... Hopefully,
what I have, fortunately, only like 12% of the people that have MS have what I have. So I have the rare, not so serious, you know, so it could be worse.
Right. No, well,
I mean, I am putting $300 now towards my IRA monthly, but just, you know, I mean, I guess I could put more towards it instead of doing more towards principal, I guess.
Well, that's really your question, right?
Yeah.
I'm all for, and what is your interest rate on your loan?
It's 4.875%.
So that alone is not, you know, when you put every dollar towards that, what you're doing is basically earning 4.875%. So it's more than you would be getting in a bank account, right?
Right.
But it may not be more than what you would get by plowing money away into an IRA that's actually fully invested. So I saw this really interesting story this week in the Wall Street Journal about how many 10-year periods after recession, if you put $10,000 away, or $5,000, or $1,000, doesn't really matter, how much money would you make? What kind of a return could you expect in the 10 years after? And in almost, I think it was every 10-year period since World War II, you would have done far better in investing in the stock market in a balanced portfolio than you would have done just sort of putting money away in cash, which is essentially what you're doing when you're prepaying your mortgage.
Okay.
So I have to say to you that, you know, in your situation, as long as you have plenty of cash, you can always split the difference, and you can put some money towards your mortgage, right? An extra payment or two.
I'd say an extra $100 or something, but another $200 towards my retirement, you know.
Correct. You can always split the difference, and that makes that makes some sense. You can also see think about refinancing. So one of the if you do have positive equity, and it sounds like you do, and you have enough of an income, even with Social Security, you may be able to refinance to a 10-year loan at under
I don't think I can refinance. I'm not upside down, but I have to break even. So when you talk to refinance...
Oh, so you don't have enough cash to refinance?
No, you have to put 20% down, so that kind of defeats the purpose of Drew. I mean, what have I gained? 1.5%?
No, the only reason you would do this is if you could refinance to like a 10-year loan at 2.75%.
Right.
You'd probably be making the same payments you're making now, but pay off your loan in 10 years. That would be the only reason to try and do that. And but under you wouldn't get that rate under HARP, which is how you would have to refinance because you don't have enough equity. So that probably won't work for you. But for somebody else who's listening, that might be a perfect solution.
Yeah.
So I think your best shot is going to be split the difference. I want you to have...
Split the difference.
Split the difference.
Add a little more and then put a little bit towards principal. And if I don't do it 10 years, maybe a little longer. But
right. So it's 12 or 13 years or 14 years. And anything that's sooner than 20 years is a win for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you and your fiancé live together?
Yes.
Okay. So...
Yeah. She had a house. She got rid of it. So, I mean, of course, you know, she's a little younger than me, but yet... Down the road, you know, she'll retire, so I mean, we'll have that income, whatever, too.
So right. So you've got
retirement. I'm not by myself, so.
Right. I want you to do the other part of it. Maybe you've already done this, but since you aren't going to get married, it sounds like anytime soon. I want you to make sure that you and she have the proper paperwork.
Yeah, so I did put her on my title.
Not just that, which by the way was a gift, but. Because you're not married.
Right.
But I mean paperwork that you redo your wills, you have powers of attorney for health care and financial matters that go into effect if you become incapable. Because right now, if you go into the hospital, she is not legally entitled to either make any decisions for you or even be there if somebody who's closer to you in the bloodline says she's out.
We just spoke of that just a week ago or something about having her put on power of attorney on my bank accounts if something does happen to me or whatever.
You need it for you need it for financial matters and health matters. You guys need wills, and you need to protect. If this is a long-term relationship and you're living together, so I assume it is.
Yes.
Whether or not you get married, I want you guys to take the steps you need to take to protect each other, and so that you're protecting her to the best of your ability. And that's just. That's just how it goes, right? That is part and parcel of it.
It makes sense. Yes, it does. I agree with you.
And then I think you guys have a bright future ahead of you.
Well, I hope so.
I hope so, too.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Mike. Thanks for calling the show. I appreciate it. 47 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Bert joins us on the line from Woodstock. Hi, Bert.
Yes, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How can
I
help?
My question was twofold. I'm a Vietnam era vet.
Mm-hmm.
I've been fighting the VA, and during that time, they kept turning me down and remanding me, and I kept losing money because of my disability. And also, we owned a house together. We bought it in 1999, and during that time, we were supposed to had our new FI. And a couple other things, and that's when we kept switching from EMC to EMS to Wells Fargo, you name a bank. We've been moved around paperwork-wise, but when we challenged them about the paperwork, all of a sudden we went into foreclosure. And we were one of those that got documented by the little postcards basically over 2 years ago. And then we responded, wrote all our materials down for them, sent it up through, it was supposed to be through Georgia's Attorney General, I think it was at the time, this fund. And then we got another note, basically a year and something ago, my wife did. Somehow they actually removed my name, even though almost every check was wrote was I signed and paid for. And now we just heard about this coming out because they told us they weren't going to have any releases of any funds till the end of the year, And now while we're riding, we heard this, and I just parked, and I'm trying to find out whether it's the same outfit that George has sued for the money for falsifying or accelerating foreclosures.
The answer is I don't know if it's the same money or different money, because there have been so many settlements, Bert. There's the $25 billion foreclosure settlement. There's the legal foreclosure relief fund. There's literally like another half dozen states that have gone after them. But have you gotten a letter in the last couple of weeks?
I am not. Last couple weeks?
Last month or two.
I cannot tell you because I was in rehab.
Okay, so you need to find out. If you did get one, or you think you should have, you can call the OCC in Washington, or you can send a note and file a complaint with helpwithmybank.gov.
Help. Okay, do you have, can you give me the number there and slow down because you were speaking? I got my hands all busted up while I was in the military, too, so my writing speed is kind of slow.
I don't, let me see if I don't actually have it memorized. I know that'll sound strange to you that I don't actually have all these numbers memorized.
I wish I could remember everything I can remember, too.
I just can't anymore. I absolutely can't. But there is a website, and this you can write down.
Okay.
So the website is called helpwithmybank.gov. There is a phone number that is listed on that website, and this is the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. There is a.
Okay, did you say help in the first part?
Yes, helpwithmybank.gov. The phone number that you can call to get more information is 888-995-4673. 888-995-4673. And I will put that out on Twitter for everybody who wants to get it as well. Very, very important if you think that you were foreclosed on illegally. This is kind of your last chance to get in on this settlement. Bert, I hope that helps. It's 52 minutes past the hour. I'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
It's 58 minutes past the hour on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. This is the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. Lines are wide open. 404-872-0750 is our number, or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, the website thinkglink.com. All right, coming up next hour, we have a prize pack we're going to give away, I believe. I want to talk a little bit more about what's going on with the economy. The jobs thing is just scary. There's no other way to say it. Really scary stuff going on. And I don't think anybody really understands why we're not seeing this pickup. And we haven't even seen sequestration kick in yet. The feeling in Washington of the folks that I was talking to is that later this year is when we're going to start seeing the cutbacks. We're seeing cutbacks in so many levels. But when we start to see that, that jobs number could get a whole lot worse. And that, of course, translates directly into the economy. And there's some bright spots as well. We'll go over all of this just after news, weather, and traffic. In the meantime, happy to take your questions, 404-872-0750. You can also tweet me at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Stay tuned for more on News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Elise Glink, and we are Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on the Elise Glink Show, 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. The website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter, your key to all things Glink. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Having a conversation right now with one of our regular listeners, who is an exclusive buyer agent, and doing the math. $4.2 billion for the illegal foreclosure settlement, divided by 4 million homeowners, approximately $1,000 per home. It's really more like $800, and some are going to get $100,000, but only about 3,000 or 4,000 out of the 4 million. And most of those are active military who are foreclosed on illegally. If you think you should have gotten a postcard that says you're going to be getting a check and you didn't get one, and they've done a lot, the OCC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, which is responsible for this particular foreclosure settlement, has been sending out all kinds of conversational pieces, right? Communication pieces. If you think you should have gotten one and you didn't, then you need to contact the OCC. But they have done all kinds of high-priced tracer things to find people. As I said to them, look, you know, people got thrown out of their houses or they left. The houses were never really properly foreclosed on. How are you going to find them? And he says, we have spent a lot of time and money trying to track everybody down. But if you think that you should have received something and didn't, you can call. There's a paying agent number, 888-952-9105. 888-952-9105. And this would be for a $9.3 billion foreclosure agreement, of which 4.2 something is being paid. And the rest of it, it all comes out of the banks, and none of it comes out of the taxpayers' money. So yet another foreclosure settlement. Remember, it was like every day, every week, we'd have another foreclosure settlement. Well, this is one of them. A number here at the station, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. There are a couple of lines open. We're going to go back to calls in just a moment. But I do want to talk a little bit more about the jobs report that came out on Thursday. It is the worst jobs report in 9 months. But what's really interesting about it, and we did see the unemployment rate fall, but that's such a fake number. I can't stress this enough. The unemployment rate, the official rate of unemployment, fell to 7.6% for 7.7. It's the lowest level since December. But the decline stems entirely, almost entirely, from Americans dropping out of the labor force. The labor participation rate is now 63.3%. It is the lowest level since 1979. 1979. Let me say this again. The labor participation rate is the lowest since 1979. That rate measures the percentage of working age Americans who have or want a job. And mostly, it's men who are falling out of the workforce. And it is a really serious problem. Only 88,000 Americans were hired. Economists polled by MarketWatch thought that there would be 190,000 people. The ADP report, which is wrong all the time anyway, thought there would be a whole lot more. Everybody thought there would be more. Everybody thought we were full steam ahead. And I've been saying week after week, it just doesn't feel like we're in this kind of a strong recovery mode. I don't know how we could be in a strong recovery mode, right? We've got Europe, which is in like the sixth or seventh quarter of a recession. That means the economy in Europe has been shrinking for seven quarters in a row. That is almost 2 years of shrinking. We have the unemployment rate in places like Spain. The unemployment rate, not the U6, which is a total measure of unemployment, just the official unemployment rate, something over 25%. We're only seeing that with our real young people. But they're seeing it across the entire spectrum of the economy. We are seeing that growth, which economists have been predicting would slow in the second quarter, is supposed to decelerate down to 2.2%. We haven't even begun to see what sequestration is going to do. That takes a while. That's projected to be in the second half of the year, so after June. After July, rather. It is a concern that people are not fully employed. Now, retail sales are holding up. But at some point in time, right, at some point in time, we're going to have to face the idea that unless we have a really strong middle class of people who are earning enough money to pay a mortgage, even at this ridiculously low level, we're not going to have a strong economy. And when I say week in and week out that we're on a knife's edge, that is how I really see it. Well, when I was at the conference this week, the Society of American Business Editors and Writers, I'm at our annual conference, and we've got all these people from Washington who are talking about unfunded pension liabilities, really serious issue that nobody talks about anymore because we're also, you know, focused on things like Medicare, another really serious issue, on sequestration, another really serious issue. The budget, the deficit, where we are going in this country and where everybody around the world is. You know, it matters so much what Europe is doing, what Latin America is doing, what is going on in China. China put some really interesting things into play this week for cities because their real estate market is so overblown that it's just a matter now of time for this bomb to blow up for them. Everybody knows. So they're trying to put some measures in where you can only own one house instead of two. People are trying to stack up on properties. And if you sell, there's a really serious penalty now, something like 20% of your profits, as opposed to in this country where at least the first $250,000 per person, per owner, is protected. They're nothing right from the ground up because property prices are going up by double digits. Again, very, very scary. And so we're all interconnected in this really tough way. And you've got 12 central bankers basically deciding economic policy for everybody. And you hope they're right. You hope that they're right. And we don't know. And sometimes you just don't know the stuff until you're looking at it in arrears. But very scary nonetheless. You have to focus on it. You have to get to ground zero and then take the medicine. And pain now. I say it all the time. I say it every week. Ground zero, take the pain now. Personally, government, around the world, it's just a knife's edge. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. 1-800-WSB-TALK. If I can help you with your situation, happy to do it. You can always find me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. All right, let's go to the phones. 404-872-0750. Shelby joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Shelby.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling to get some information about Roth IRAs. I'm interested in opening one, and I'm wondering, does all income, does all the money that you use to open a Roth have to come from earned income? Can it be from other sources, like if you just happen to have some money available and want to contribute to a Roth?
It's a great question. So you are only eligible to open up a Roth if you've had earned income. So are you working? Did you earn income as opposed to getting, like, say, Social Security?
I am not working presently, but I have worked and I have earned income.
Did you work and earn income last year?
I did not.
Then you are not eligible to open a Roth IRA.
Okay.
And that's because, now, let's say you did work, you wouldn't have to use that money. You could use money that you had in savings, but you still have to have earned income. So, are you earning income this year?
No.
And are you not earning income because you've retired or because you're unemployed? You've retired.
I have retired.
Right. So, unfortunately, you can't, but that doesn't mean that you can't just put money into a regular investment account. It just means you can't do a Roth IRA.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling the show. 17 minutes past the hour. You know, I think it's so let's talk about that for just a little bit, right? So when you have earned income, and the IRS has a really good website for this, so it talks about the IRA, Roth IRA contributions you can make for 2013. So this is for 2013 taxes that would be paid next year in 2014, looking backwards, right? So if you're like Shelby for this year and you're married filing jointly or you're a qualifying widower, right, and your modified adjusted gross income is $178,000 or less, you can contribute up to the limit, which is $5,000 or $6,000 if you are over the age of 50. 50 plus, you can do that. If you're married filing separately, right, and you lived with your spouse and your adjusted modified adjusted gross income is less than $10,000, there's a reduced amount, right? If you're single, head of household, or married filing separately and you did not live with your spouse and you earn $112,000 or less, you also can go up to the limit. So the IRA, Roth IRA, and this was just updated at the end of 2012, so it's good for the whole year. The amount that you can contribute is key. Now, what I always explain to people who don't they don't get the Roth IRA. They think a Roth IRA isn't itself an investment, but it's not. It's like a fish tank. It's just like a glass holding tank. And you put the money in, it's like putting the fish into the fish tank, right? But you have to do something. You have to actually make the investment. So you open up the Roth IRA, and the money goes in. If you don't do anything, it sits in savings. It doesn't actually do anything. It doesn't really earn any money. You have to actively pick the index funds. You have to pick stocks. You have to pick bond funds. You have to pick a REIT. There are whole all kinds of investments that you can pick, and you get to decide that. But you actually have to make the decision. And if you don't, it will just sit there in the fish tank. 404-872-0750 is our number, 1-800-WSB-TALK. If you'd like me to pay for the call, I'm happy to do it. You can also tweet me your comments at Glink. We will take some more of your calls coming back in a moment. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time here on News Talk WSB. It's 25 minutes past the hour. We have a prize pack to give away. It's a cool one, worth $589. It is. It includes a four-pack of tickets to see the Atlanta Hawks versus the Milwaukee Bucks, April 12th at Phillips Arena. A gift certificate for two complete HVAC tune-ups, courtesy of Shoemate Air Conditioning and Heating. And a family four-pack of tickets to the Georgia Renaissance Festival. Ooh, it's time for that again. April 13th through June 2nd. Value $589. The number. The prize pack line is 404-741-0750. Remember, you can only win once every 30 days. And be nice to Crystal. She is taking your calls today. She's our executive producer. 26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. We're going to get back to your calls in just a moment, so feel free to line up for those. Just want to, you know, we had a conversation going on Twitter just a few minutes ago about paying off the home when you want to buy a new or used home. So we had a person tweet, should I rent or sell the home he currently lives in? It's paid off. It's worth about $62,000, but his rent is $950 that he can get every month. If you can rent a property for $12,000 a year that's worth $62,000, right, it's basically a 20% return. Yes, you have some maintenance and upkeep expenses. Yes, you're going to have some taxes, although you ought to be able to get those down pretty low. But there is free cash flow there. So then the only question you really have to ask yourself, and I talk about this in my e-books on investing in real estate, is whether or not you want to be a landlord. If you want to be a landlord, this is an amazing opportunity that any investor would want to scoop up. On my Amazon page, and I'll tweet out the link to that, I sell a group of ebooks on investing in real estate for $2.99. It's about like 100-odd pages of content for $2.99. It's everything I know. Well, it's not everything I know, but it's a lot of stuff, and you should go there and buy it at Amazon.com and figure out if you want to be a landlord, because this is a no-brainer. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Be back in a flash to take your questions on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com and midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
All the world and the mess that we're making.
It's 12:35 on the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America one house at a time. And we're starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go back to the phones. Bill joins us on the line from Johns Creek. Hey, Bill, how can I help today?
Hey, Elise, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What I've got is a condo in Florida, interest-only loan that's underwater, maybe $100,000, maybe a little less than that.
Why did you buy this condo?
Enjoyment, that kind of thing, investment back when things were looking better than they are today.
How long have you owned it?
Since 04, so about 9 years.
So you didn't buy at the very top of the market, which I guess is good.
Good. Yeah, it went higher, then crashed.
It went higher, then crashed, right. So do you use it?
We do, but it's primarily rented out most of the time, and it's cash neutral right now.
Okay.
In other words, it works out okay. So it's a 6% interest-only loan.
Mm-hmm.
And in June of 14, it'll float to market, which really brings a big dilemma up. And now the bank has called me unsolicited and offered to put it on a 30, convert it to a 30,
mm-hmm.
Fixed rate at 4.2.
You should do that, even though it's going to cost you a little bit more money each month.
Well, actually, it'll go down. It's based on today's price.
Okay.
Now, if the Treasury bill stayed anywhere near what it is, it'll cost me more because it right now would go to 2.5, I believe, because the Treasury's like 1415, 0.1415. And
your interest rate would go to?
About 2 points.
Right. But
yeah.
Your payment, I don't understand how your payment wouldn't. Your payment would.
It actually goes down a few because.
Because you're going from 6% to 4.2%.
Yeah, it's almost a wash on the cash outlay.
Yeah. And so what is your concern?
Well, it's $5,000, the refi.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't intend to keep it forever. So I'm thinking 3 to 5 to 6 years, I'll eventually sell it because I'm eventually going to retire. I'm not sure I want to worry about the cash flow at that point. So even if I'm underwater, I'll maybe have to write a smaller check in another 3 to 5 years. But we've been holding off, waiting, making that decision to see how much it'll bounce back.
Right.
So now my decision is, well, do I spend $5,000 in refinance cost to pick up 4.2, and what's the Treasury bill going to look like a year from now? And it could be end up costing me a significant amount of money in the first 2 to 3 years.
All right, so let's back this up a little bit. I don't actually think interest rates are going to be a whole lot higher next year than this year. So
okay.
If your interest rate would fall to 2.7%, is that what you said?
No, it's 2.25 over the Treasury bill.
Okay. So
1 year Treasury, and I think Friday it was at 0.14.
Right. It's like nothing. It's like zero.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like 2.3%, let's say. It would go from 6% to 2.3%.
Yeah, and the max they can increase it per year is 2% after
mm-hmm.
that.
Okay. So that we would have to see a real shock to the economy for interest rates to go up that much in a year. So now we're talking 2014, you'd be paying 2.3. In 2015, the most you would be paying is 4.3, right?
That's correct.
And then the following year, if it went up another 2%, it would be 6.3. Or slightly over where you are now.
Right, but I had to pay $5,000 to get there.
Correct, but you're underwater.
Yes.
So you can't refinance any other way.
No, you're correct.
So what you're betting on is that by 2016, which is when you'd be paying more than you are now, you're going to be able to sell the property for at least as much as what you owe. Because if you have to take a loss at that point, it'll cost you a lot more than $5,000. unless...
Yeah, one more bogey on this.
Oh, of course.
If I don't sell it in 2017, I have to begin paying the principal over a 20-year amortization.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that means whatever the balance is divided by, you know, 240 months. But
correct.
So the cash flow can get pretty serious at that
mm-hmm.
point.
So
you've really,
got...
Do I pay more now? It's almost like buying an insurance plan is the way I've been looking at it. But if I really could sell it in 3 to 5 years, I might be better off just letting it float to market.
How far underwater are you?
I 364 on the loan, probably could sell it for 290 to 310.
Okay, and what's going on where you are in Florida? Because in Florida, there's the highest number of what we call zombie foreclosures. So about 90 to 100,000 homes that people just abandoned that are now going to float onto the market. And if you're in one of those areas, that's not too good. Now, if you're in Miami where they're starting to build new condos because they can't sell them fast enough, that's better. Except people want new and not even 3 years old. So where are you?
In the Panhandle area.
Which is where a lot of those zombie foreclosures are.
Yeah.
So that means that property prices aren't really going to be going up that much, and you need them to go up pretty significantly. So what you're doing is paying $5,000 to avoid a possible $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 loss 3 years from now when you, if you have to sell, or you then start prepaying the loan on a 20-year rate. Sounds like, you know, you're going to have, what makes you sleep at night, Bill? What lets you sleep at night? Because $5,000 is not that much money for somebody with, you know, this kind of risk. So you, what lets you sleep at night?
Well, I think you're exactly right. The knowing that all of a sudden the issue about what it's going to do is off the table. And I put $5,000 in to make that happen.
Right. So that, to me, is not a bad way to go. If you want to make even more money on this, right... So then you don't want to have that, even at 4.2%, which is nothing for an investment property, and you're going to be locking in the payment you're making now, which means your property stays revenue neutral.
Yep,
right?
That's correct.
All of that seems like a win to me, but it's really, at the bottom line, what lets you get a good night's sleep? And in my mind, that I'd rather you not have to pay $5,000, but since you will start building equity... And you don't have to worry anymore about these deadlines. Seems like a good way to go. That's what I would do. 43 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Howard joins us on the line from Buckhead. Howard, what's going on?
Well, I'm impatiently listening to the dialogue, and I have a rather permanent problem with the other people, most of them, Sean Hannity and so forth. They don't seem to know anything about the economics of the Great Depression and John Maynard Keynes and the way this depression is different, and they don't care. They just want to blame it on Obama. Well, that's enough of that. But I was in Boston for 33 years in the military-industrial playpen, and I worked at all, you know, Raytheon and MIT and Harvard and so forth. And at Harvard, I went to school there under Professor Schelling for a while, who won the Nobel Prize in Economics a couple of years ago. And I just think that people have no clue as to what's going on. And you were saying that we have a lot of people whose houses may be forfeit, but whose houses should not be forfeit, probably. We came very close to having that happen due to a very prominent local bank. They seemed to want to foreclose on our house. Well, they didn't, but it was unbelievably unpleasant, okay? And there are lots of things that people can be learning to do. There are lots of new technologies. If you read the MIT Technology Review, it's full of coming attractions, like we've got to rebuild the entire electrical network of the country. And something called 3D printing is now available, and that's how things are going to be manufactured. And people can actually afford to do that. You can make almost anything, okay?
Oh, that stuff's really cool. Actually, they just showed that technology on Big Bang Theory, which is sort of, I don't know if you watch that show, it's hilarious, my kids love it, but well, they just showed that technology on that show. It was cool.
Well, there's a little story on in the MIT Technology Review, and it's extremely convincing that there is no problem doing it, and everybody could, as a cottage industry, for example, the gun problem is permanently out of control because people are making guns in their basement now, and if they had tried to do something 10 years ago, they might not, I don't think they would, have gotten it under control, but it's too late now. We have a gun for every man, woman, and child in the country, and that's a gun show in Marietta.
So Howard, let me ask you a question. Are you thinking that we can solve our problem in this country with employment if people would just learn how to use computers and become technologically savvy? Because I think that everybody today, I mean, I look at my kids who are 15 and 17, and all of their friends are online all the time. So maybe this problem will just solve itself. But we're in a transition moment, an inflection point in our history where we have the past and future colliding in a way that millions of people are unemployed. And I'm not sure that giving them computer training is going to allow them to solve problems that the MIT Technology Review has actually revealed, much as I wish they could. I don't think you're really, unless I misunderstand, but I don't think you're actually suggesting that, right?
Not at all. I don't think you have to learn much computer technology. The kind of systems you'll be using will be unbelievably friendly. There'll be iPads, and you'll just wiggle your fingers, and things will happen, and you'll have to learn the process, but you won't have to learn any computer science. I got a degree in computer science, and I don't recommend that anybody get that. It's a losing hand from here on, okay?
But right.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, right, you don't need to learn computer science to actually use the technology. You do have to learn computer science to create the technology and invent the technology. And we do need people who will do this. But I don't disagree. I actually think there is a lot of economics from the Depression era that we haven't properly learned. And Keynes, I just learned this at my conference this week, which is so interesting. A very good friend of mine named John Wozniak, who's written more books than I have, has a new book coming out on Keynes where he talks about actually what a great capitalist he was, and that he went to Cambridge and looked at all kinds of original trading documents and other kinds of documents that he kept that are now like deep, deep, deep in storage in the Cambridge Library. And he brings it all out in his new book, which is coming out soon. And so I'll have John on to talk about it when it's actually published. It's being published by McGraw-Hill this spring. Very, very exciting stuff. And like you, he thinks that people just have not learned the right lessons of the past. And look where we are. We still aren't out of this thing. So I think you're probably just right about that. Thank you for your call. It is 48 minutes past the hour. I want to get a couple of people in before we end the show today. Donna joins us on the line now from Marietta. Donna, welcome to the program.
Hi, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'll be fast. I am retired, kind of. I'm also a real estate agent. And I see the country going in decline severely, and I don't know if it's ever going to recover.
How do you see it? When you say you see it going into decline, what tells you that? Do you mean economically? Do you mean the people? Do you mean socially? What do you mean by that?
I think everything, economically, for sure, and socially, it just seems like no one cares. Everything that we were taught when we were younger, it's all gone. It's just a memory, if that. And the only one that acknowledges that are people my age. You know, they're retired people or maybe 10 years younger than that.
Okay, so, I don't, it's a little vague, but okay, we'll go with it.
Yeah. Okay, well, my question is, I am considering going to another country, but I want to be careful that it's not a country like Cyprus. I want to move what money I have to that country and not have it tied to U.S. currency.
Okay.
Because I think it's going to fall. I really do.
Well, you don't have to leave the country to invest in currencies. But I would warn you that I don't, and if you listen to the top of the show, I talked about this. You know, Europe has been in, you know, economic decline now for six quarters in a row. China is a big concern. Cyprus, which is this tiny little pimple of, you know, in the, when you look at Europe in general, and you get tiny little Cyprus is causing a major headache because who invests in Cyprus? It's Russian wealthy oligarchs who don't want their money to disappear. Latin America, I don't actually think there are countries in this world that are any safer than the United States for your money. That is why our interest rate is so low, because everybody else around the world is investing in the United States for its safety and its security. And that is just a fact. So I don't have an answer for you on where else you can go in the world and be safer financially. I think the U.S. is the place to be, and that's why everybody else is invested here. 51 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. Be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Klink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
It's 57 minutes past the hour on the Elise Klink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. So I've tweeted out the links to my Buy, Close, Move In book, which is my most recent book, How to Navigate the New World of Real Estate Safely and Profitably and End Up with the Home of Your Dreams. That book is now available in Kindle as well as in the paperback edition. So you can find those both at Amazon.com. Just type in my name at Amazon and all of my books pop up. The other thing that I put up is a link to my Successful Real Estate Investor's Guide. $2.99, and it's over 100 pages of great information. If you want to be a landlord, this will tell you how to do it and whether you should do it. I also have, and I'm hoping it's going to be done this week, a series of nine parts of a webinar. It's over 3 hours of video about investing in real estate that I am hoping to get up and on the air. So very, very soon. So watch out for that. Again, if you sign up for the free weekly newsletter, that's where you're going to find all the really cool information. So the music's starting. That means time is up. I don't know how that happened. You want to find me? Questions at thinklink.com, thinkglink.com. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Follow me on Twitter at Glink. Read our stuff at CBS News, at Yahoo, at the Equifax Finance blog. The best information for you for free. And it's almost tax time, so Equifax has a lot of tax information. 58 minutes past the hour. Enjoy the final game. Go Louisville. My sister's voting for Michigan. And have a great week, everybody. Talk to you next Sunday. Feet hit the floor, then get on down.